My name's Scott Allen. I came to you today to talk about jQuery. I'm curious how many people are already using jQuery. Oh, wow, a good many. Awesome. I still want to start at the beginning. I want to tell you a little bit about the history of jQuery and the motivation for why you should be using it if you're not already using it, how we can integrate it with Visual Studio and different ASP.NET applications. I'll look at web forms and also MVC. And then we'll talk about some of the specific features that are in jQuery, and I'll give you a brief overview of some of the plugins that are available to download for jQuery to use. It's a very rich ecosystem. So where did this thing come from? It came from a fellow named John Resig, who was essentially reached a point where he was unhappy with existing JavaScript frameworks. And one of the primary reasons was that every developer and every company that went out to create a JavaScript framework flavored that framework in some way that reflected the preference of that developer's favorite language, and the favorite language not being JavaScript. So you can find lots of JavaScript libraries that try to feel like Java or try to feel like Python. And if you've ever used the Microsoft Ajax libraries, for instance, they explicitly try to feel very much like the CLR, like you're actually defining C# classes. And to have some of the same concepts with events and properties and interfaces and namespaces and multiple inheritance and all this stuff that really doesn't come out of the box with JavaScript. But because it's such a flexible, dynamic language, you can fake a lot of those things. But John sort of took a step back and said, you know, those kind of libraries are great, but I like JavaScript. And what I would like to do is create a JavaScript library that was written to leverage all the strengths of JavaScript. And he had some specific goals also when doing this. One was to leverage CSS selectors. So selectors are these pattern matching techniques that you can use to identify DOM elements that are in your document, to pick them out and then manipulate them. He wanted to use selectors. He wanted very little syntactic fluff, so the ability to write very little code but get a lot of work done, make it very expressive, lots of shortcuts, lots of wrist-friendly methods and actions that you can invoke. He wanted it to be lightweight because everyone's worried about download size. When you take on a JavaScript library, it's a dependency. It's something that you have to serve up to customers. And particularly if you're running a public website, you're very concerned about how much time someone will need to download that JavaScript library. So he wanted the core of jQuery to be very small. He wanted it to be compatible, so it would work across all the major browsers, Internet Explorer, Safari, Chrome, Firefox, and so forth. And he also wanted it to be as extensible as possible. So he realized that the core jQuery library that he was implementing was not going to do everything, and it certainly wasn't going to handle UI widgets and date picker controls and accordions and stuff like that. But he wanted to make it very easy for someone who had that need for a component like that to make it look as if it was part of jQuery, essentially just plug into that library and be available in a very natural way. So that brings us to today, where jQuery, the last survey I saw said that of all the public websites in the world, or at least the 7,000 most popular public websites in the world, 30% of them use jQuery. So it's a pretty popular framework. It's almost standardized in some communities. It has a very rich ecosystem of people that contribute plugins to this. You can find thousands of plugins available on the jQuery website. And specifically, how does jQuery relate to Microsoft? Did anyone hear the news from the Mix conference a couple weeks ago in Las Vegas? The news was essentially that Microsoft loves jQuery. That was the news. Specifically, they love jQuery so much that the Microsoft Ajax client libraries, all the features that they wanted to build into that in the future, like the templating and client-side data binding and the script loader, they're shifting focus away from their client-side libraries, and they're shifting focus to contributing code to jQuery. So Microsoft, billion-dollar company, is going to be another, just like any other contributor, they're going to have to work with the jQuery core team and say, here's some stuff that we'd like in jQuery. And it remains to be seen if all of that stuff will be in the core jQuery library or if it'll be available via plugins. But either way, it's going to be jQuery-esque, if you know what I mean. It's going to have that jQuery flavor. It's not going to be the traditional Ajax client library flavor that was very tried to be like C sharp. And if you want to look at some of that and try it out, this URL on GitHub has their plugin for the client-side templating. So you can download that source code and give it a whirl. So moving forward, when ASP.NET MVC, moving back actually first one step, when MVC was released, they actually shipped jQuery in the box. And it was at that point that Microsoft said, we support jQuery. So if you take a dependency on ASP.NET MVC and you use jQuery and you find something that you think is wrong, you can call up Microsoft support. We'll try to resolve that for you. And with Visual Studio 2010, it's going to be right there out of the box when you do file new project, which is very exciting. And then there's a couple different ways that you can get it into an ASP.NET site. Chances are you'll want to visit jQuery.com to download the latest version, because what Microsoft will ship will be a little bit behind in 4 months or 6 months or 2 years. But if you go to jQuery.com, you can find the download link, and you can always find the latest version here that you can download locally. And you can get the uncompressed version, which is very easy on the eyes, and you can read it, and the minified version, which is stripped down to optimize for download speed. So all the white space is stripped out, and the variable names are shortened and so forth. And then something else that you'll probably want to keep up with, although you might not need this in 2010, is the Visual Studio documentation file, which I'll show you how you can use that in just a bit. But once you've downloaded these, and you're in a web forms project, curious, how many people are doing web forms projects? A good many. How many people are doing MVC projects? A few. People doing both, too? At least a couple, yeah. Web forms, it's very easy to get started with jQuery. Oop, that was actually not the one I wanted to show. You can use the script manager and just add a script reference to the jQuery library and then any other JavaScript that you need. For MVC projects, I found it very easy just to include script tags. So probably you'll have some sort of master page template, and you could do this in web forms too, where you have your jQuery source included. And then each individual view in MVC, if it needs some additional scripts, it can add those script tags. So what I usually do in an MVC project is, this doesn't happen by default, is I will add a ASP colon content placeholder control inside of the head tag. And what that lets you do from your views is essentially inject anything additional that you need into the head, such as script tags or CSS links. Set the title this way too. In web forms, you could easily put the script manager inside of your master page. And then web forms can still add additional pieces through a script manager proxy, because you're only allowed one script manager per form, right? But you can have as many script proxies as you want. Oops, not services. Scripts. There we go. So you could keep adding scripts that way. You could even do that from a user control if you wanted to. Questions? Why not from a CDN? I'll come back to that at the very end. So the question was, why am I loading it off of my local server instead of just using one of the content delivery networks that is provided? So let's just actually skip to that part. Almost everybody hosts jQuery somewhere. Google hosts it, Microsoft hosts it. jQuery themselves have a partner where they host the scripts. So if you have a public website, you would definitely want to use one of these content delivery networks, because they are geolocated around the world, so no matter where your users are, chances are they'll have quick and easy access to pull down that script. It's already been minified for you and so forth. And chances are, if your site's using the CDN, and your site's using the CDN, and my site's using the CDN, that'll already be cached in the user's browser. So it's not even a, you don't even pay for that download when you reference a CDN. These are the Microsoft CDNs, ajax.microsoft.com/ajax/jQuery. You can reference it from there. Make sense? Pretty exciting? Is it a security problem to load those from a CDN? Yeah, I guess I've never considered that, but I could see how someone who's paranoid about security might be concerned that you're loading that from someone, you know, do you trust Google, do you trust Microsoft? And they're not SSL URLs, so did someone spoof a domain server somewhere along the path? Sure, I could see that, yep. Something to consider. All right, jQuery itself. Everything starts with the dollar sign function, and the dollar sign function is a little bit confusing. First of all, because it is a dollar sign, but in JavaScript, that's a legal identifier. So I can have a function whose name is dollar sign. The other part that's confusing about the dollar sign is that it is overloaded. One of the neat things you can do with jQuery and JavaScript in general is that because it's a loosely typed language, you have the ability to take any sort of parameters. So it's not like the jQuery function says, I need a string as the first parameter. No, you could pass a string as the first parameter. jQuery will figure out what to do with it. You could pass a DOM element as the first parameter. jQuery will figure out what to do with it. You could pass an array of numbers as the first parameter to the dollar sign function. jQuery will figure out what to do with it. So it does a lot of introspection at runtime to see what are you passing me. Does it look like an HTML? Is it a string? If it's a string, does it look like HTML? Well, then maybe what the person wants to do is create an HTML snippet. Ultimately, though, what it does after it has figured out what you have passed it is that it will return what we call the jQuery object, which then has all the methods for jQuery, and you can continue to perform some operations on it. So this little snippet of code, what it's doing is that first call to the jQuery function, it's saying, I want to create this little snippet of HTML, hello world between inside of a div tag, and then I want you to take that and append it to the document body. jQuery will do that happily. The second jQuery operation isn't creating a div. That's a selector that's telling jQuery to go out and essentially find all the divs in the document. Find all the divs in the document, and then the jQuery object itself is a, think of it as a set. So when I go out and select divs, I might have 10 divs on a page. I might have one div on a page. I might have 100 divs on a page, or I might have no divs on the page. This method will work in all of those cases. So even if it doesn't find a div, it doesn't throw an error. But if it finds 100 divs, in this case, it's going to wrap them all inside of H1 tags. So it operates on everything that it finds as a set. In a way, it's a lot like link. So if you've used link at all, then you always work with sequences of objects. You filter them and project them and sort them and so forth. jQuery is very similar in the sense that you're always operating on a set of objects. When you set CSS or wire up click events, does that on all the objects. So the selectors are what are really cool about jQuery. So given this snippet of HTML, where we have a div tag that we want it to be a menu, essentially, and inside of that's a paragraph for instructors, so and a div inside of that, we can write some jQuery that goes out and this is the syntax for finding an element by ID, so put the pound sign in front. Find the menu, and then set the width of that to 150 pixels. Then find any paragraph P tags inside of the menu, and manipulate the style on that, so set the background color. And then find all anchor tags, and set the display equal to block. Let's look at this in action once. All right, so I'm going to go into selectors.aspx, and I'm going to comment out a line of code that's actually, let me not do that. This is the line of code that's including a JavaScript file to manipulate the page, and it's essentially some of the code that we saw on screen. So let me comment that out, save this, and refresh so you can see what it looks like just as a plain page without any of the jQuery stuff. Then we'll do all these CSS manipulations. And you might say, well, I can do all that with CSS style sheets, and that's true. We'll get to the more behavioral aspects of jQuery in just a minute. But one thing I want to point out about this example is that once you've selected the menu item, when you tell jQuery to go out and find me something with an ID of menu, it goes at the very top of your document and starts looking all throughout the document. So if you have a large page, that could be a relatively expensive operation. And again, expensive is always a relative term. But this line of code is going out and doing that same thing. I'm saying start at the top of the document, find something with an ID of menu, and then locate the p tag inside of it. There's a slightly better way to do this, which is, see if I can, can't zoom in on that. Can I? Yes. The second parameter here is a context, which is essentially what DOM element do you want me to start searching from? So if we save off this as a reference, then what we can tell jQuery is essentially start at that menu object and start looking for all the paragraph tags that are underneath of it instead of starting at the very top of the document. So that's a little tip if you're just worried about performance. And by the way, what is this thing? This is a way to get IntelliSense in Visual Studio 2008. Excuse me. It's very easy to generate that. Without that line of code, some things sometimes work, sometimes they don't. So I do $, nothing happens. I'm lost. I don't know how to use jQuery now. But if I come into the Solution Explorer and I find the VS doc file, I can just drag it over here, drop it, and it'll automatically create a reference for me. And that tells Visual Studio this is a file that contains symbols that I expect to use inside of here. So if I save everything and count to three, come back, then it's going to work. It can be a little flaky sometimes, but so you can see, I can pass it an expression, a string of HTML, a DOM element, or a callback. Oh, and the other thing I want to point out, this is actually the preferred mechanism now for wiring up essentially the let's get started method, right? Do document.ready. So wrap the document in the jQuery object and then tell it that this is the code that I want to execute when it's ready. Start changing all these things. Making sense? Selectors are really neat because you can do some pretty amazing things with them. This is an example of just finding any element. So E is, if you just pass in div, you're telling it to find all the divs. If you pass in div greater than sign and an F, you're looking for some element F that is an immediate child of that element. So div greater than A, you're looking for just the anchor tags that are children of div elements. And you can do preceding. You can pick up elements that only have an attribute. Doesn't matter what that attribute is, as long as it has that attribute. And that's a little bit different than looking for an element by a specific attribute, like input equal or type equals button, right? So I'm just looking for input elements type equals button. Precede it with the pound to pick up things by ID. That's what we did with the menu. So I wanted to get pound menu. Precede things with a dot to just pick them up by class name. And I think for me, this is actually preferred over picking things up by ID. I like to think of CSS classes not just to indicate how something should be presented, but how something should behave now. It's very easy for me to look at an HTML element that says class equals menu and think, oh, that's going to be wired up to not just look like a menu, but also there's probably some jQuery code looking for that that's going to make it behave like a menu. This is really neat for working with web forms because one of the selectors that you can use, if you look at the full reference, and by the way, jQuery has its own built-in selector engine. It's called Sizzle. So it's not relying on the browser to do this. And that's important because we all know that the browsers have subtly different implementations of how they actually work with CSS. But it supports most of these CSS3 selectors, including... This one right here is looking for an element who has an attribute with a value that ends with bar. So a foo attribute that ends with bar. Web forms programmers I've seen like this because they can specify, I want the element who has an ID attribute that ends with and then some string value. Because we know in web forms, if I have server controls inside of master pages or user controls, when they render client-side IDs to the client, they get munged, right? They come out as like CTL00 underscore blah, 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 blah. You can look for just the ending part of that ID string using a selector like this, but I usually prefer to just use a CSS class, as I mentioned before. I think that's easier. There's also what we call some pseudo classes, which is things like, I want just the evenly numbered anchor tags. So there's 10 anchor tags on the page, but I'm just going to get 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10. Because I'm going to stripe these things, they'll get a different background color than the odd numbered anchor tags. I could also say something like div, any div that does not have the ID of menu. I'm going to pick up those divs and change their padding a little bit. And I could also look for things like I want an anchor tag that contains the text Scott. And then I want to wrap that so that it's emphasized and bold, so it's overly emphasized. What does that look like? It looks hideous, right? Because I cannot pick colors to change my life, or save my life, but that's why people don't let me in the CSS files. I don't get commit access on those. But essentially that's what that code did. So it made Scott emphasized and bold, and you can see the anchor tags are essentially striped, different background colors. And this is another power of jQuery is it makes it really easy to work with attributes, whether it's CSS attributes or other pieces that you might want to set. The attr function, if you just invoke it on a jQuery object, it's going to return the value of that attribute. You can also use it to set a value. But there are lots of helper functions to let you get to specific attributes, like the class attribute. So if I want to add a class to one element or a set of elements, remove a class, toggle it between two classes, between having the class and not having the class, that's really easy to do. It's also really easy to dig out the HTML, a value, the text property. So this snippet of code down here is saying if it's an anchor tag that contains Scott, then I want you to set the href attribute. So we're going to point that to a specific web page. Let's see if that works. We might have changed the pluralsight.com layout since I last did this, but I'll have to go in and change that code. So if we've changed the website around a bit. But you can see it now has an href. The others were just blank. But of course, a large part of the reason why we use jQuery is to work with events. And the generic function that you use to bind to any event is called bind. And by any event, I mean you can subscribe to events that don't even exist. So you can use bind to subscribe to click events, mouse over events, things like that. You can also bind to something called foo, or bind to something called bar. Now, the browser, no matter what the user does, they're never going to be able to trigger a foo event, but there is a trigger method in the jQuery API that lets you raise these events manually. I think it's kind of interesting. Sometimes you want to work with events that are not DOM events, but you want some special custom event that represents some business logic process that happened in the client side. You can put your own custom events in here. You can use bind then to bind that event to any function. There's a bunch of event helpers if you don't like using bind, because with bind you have to pass in click. The event helpers are methods like click that you just invoke. And then you pass in the function to execute. One important thing here before we look at the code, the this reference in JavaScript, if you're familiar with it all, it's a little bit slippery. It can be manipulated, unlike C-sharp code. So I can say, go in JavaScript, I can say, go invoke this function, and here's the element to point at, or here's the object to point at for the this reference. And what jQuery does is it uses that ability to invoke these event handlers and set up the this pointer to reference the DOM element or whatever object that you subscribe to, the event that you subscribe to. So, for example, let's look at events. And we have some CSS stuff there, but this line is saying, go out and find all the anchor tags, and I want to handle the mouse over event. And what I want you to do is wire up this anonymous function that's declared inside of here. And then this, just by itself, would reference that DOM element. When I mouse over an anchor tag, this function gets invoked, this pointer references that anchor tag. I could go out and do things like this.style and manipulate it that way. It's quite common, however, to take that DOM element that gets passed into here through the this reference and encapsulate it inside of jQuery also. So $ pass in this, I'm saying, hey jQuery, go wrap this object so I can do things like dot add CSS class or dot slide down, slide up, slide toggle, do something interesting with it. That makes it easier than just trying to work at the native level and setting styles and making sure I don't overwrite someone else's style and so forth. So when they mouse out, we'll remove that class, highlight. Let's see if we have this running. Yeah. So you can see I get the mouse over effect. Awesome stuff, right? I agree. That's the example of the code. And so instead of writing each line of code like this, I do something.mouseover, semicolon, something.mouseout, semicolon. Everything that you invoke through that jQuery object essentially returns this. It returns a reference to the jQuery object again, which is that set of all the elements that you're wrapping on. And that makes it easy to do method chaining, which is essentially go up to the anchor tag, wire up the mouse over event, do some stuff, wire up the mouse out event, do some stuff. Now I want to do some filtering, so this is interesting. So remember, $ anchor tag gives me a set of elements, 10 anchor tags. I'm wiring up the mouse over event on all 10, wiring up the mouse out event on all 10. And now what I'm telling jQuery with that line of code that says filters, I'm saying, these 10 elements that you have, I want to filter it out so I just get the evenly numbered ones. So 10 elements, all of a sudden becomes 5. And I'm saying with those 5 elements, add a class, add a CSS class called EvenRow. That'll set up the background color to a hideous purple color, right? And then I call end. And what end tells jQuery to do is remove that last destructive filter. So I had 10 elements, filtered it down to 5, I call .end, boom, we're back to 10 elements again. I filter it to just the odd number ones, that gets a different CSS class, we end that filtering, so we're back to 10 elements, and now we can add a filter, try to filter it out to just the anchor tags that contains Scott. So it may be one or two anchor tags. Kind of neat, right? So you can filter these sets and unfilter these sets. And is described as removing the last destructive filter. So just to show that code running, should have an example of that. So there it all is in one big block, which is a little bit contrived because I'm trying to, you know, make an example out of this. But should be able to run it in the browser, and it behaves just the same as what we had before. It's just in many situations you can both get some performance gains from this because you're not going out and selecting all the anchor tags over and over again. In a lot of cases, you can make the code a little more readable just because you can read through that method chains and make more sense of it. Effects. So jQuery does come with some built-in effects in the core jQuery library, things like hiding stuff and showing stuff and toggling stuff, sliding stuff and fading things out. There's even a custom animate function. Here's an example where I'm saying go out and find anything called anything that has a CSS class of section and hide it. Just make it go away. But then when someone clicks on paragraph tags inside of my menu, I want you to get that element, move to the next one, and then toggle it, slide toggle it. So in order to understand what that's doing, let's revisit the markup inside of here. And so we were going out and finding sections and hiding them. So essentially, that should make this div appear hidden. But then when someone clicks on a paragraph tag, right, because we wired up paragraph tag inside the menu, we wanted to go to the next thing and toggle it outward. So it should move to that div, which is the next element, and then make it show or hide itself. And what that looks like at runtime, it's just really simple. Does someone whistle? It's the colors, right? They're just really stimulating. I know. When I dream at night, I dream in these colors. Let's see if I can show you an example of the animate function, because it's interesting in itself. Let's do this. Let's see, what do I want to animate? Let me do this.next.animate. And animate's sort of this open-ended animation function where you can just chuck in different options. For instance, I should be able to say something. I should be able to create essentially a configuration object here. You'll notice that the IntelliSense says, hope the zooming's not making anyone sick. The IntelliSense says, pass in some options. So what are these options? You'll get no IntelliSense help with what the options are. That's when you kind of have to go to the jQuery website, the documentation, which is very good, by the way, and say, what are the available options for animate? And it'll tell you what those are. But I should be able to say, if I remember how to do this, I should be able to say something like font size, let's change it to 3em, and I want to do that fast. Let's see if I did this right. Let me do make sure everything is saved. Refresh this page. Oh, I broke something. Oh, yeah, that's not going to make any sense, is it? JavaScript's going to be like, what is this? Okay. But again, I don't do UIs for a living. Right. But it's really neat because you can tell jQuery to animate different styles. So you can say change the width of this thing, or change the font size, change the color, and it'll take care of setting up a timer. And you know, if you want something to happen over the course of 3 seconds, it'll keep calling back every few milliseconds and updating properties to reach that ultimate value. Right? It's very flexible. But we'll talk about jQuery UI in just a little bit, because it adds some things that are, instead of working at that low level with the animate function, it gives you some very high level animation things that you can do. So you can tell things to spin or explode. I'll show you the explode. Server communication. So jQuery also gives you the ability to do AJAX communication with your web server. It's very easy to communicate with MVC controllers that return JSON results. It's also pretty straightforward to communicate with ASMX web services and WCF web services. There's a couple different options in jQuery. There's what I call the high-level options, which are just like .load. So if I do $.load, I can just tell it to go out and to this URL and grab whatever's there. Grab whatever HTML is there and bring it back. You can also do a post that way. And then there's this low-level AJAX call, which we'll be looking at, that lets you specify specific options, like timeouts, what do I do if there's an error, what do I do before I try to deserialize the JSON? So using Git and Post, let me show you the code for this. Wrong project. So when someone clicks on one of those names that we've been looking at in the weird-looking purple menus, I want to go out to the server. And I want to say, post something to the server to this URL, gitinstructorinfo.ashx. So it's ashx. It's one of those low-level HTTP handlers in ASP.NET. Right? It's literally just something that implements IHTTP handler. You implement the process request method, and you're off and running. It's a very ugly implementation in there, so don't look at that. But that's all it is. You just write out text into the context. Pass along is data. The instructor parameter should be instructor name. So whatever you pulled out of the text box, or whatever you pulled out of the thing that was clicked on, we're going to pull the text out of it. So it'd be like Fritz or Scott or Ian. And then if it's successful and you get a result back, what I want you to do is invoke this function, which is going to take that result and add it into the section that has an ID of detail. Add it as the HTML inside of the detail. So we can see this in action. If I go to the right browser, which I think I closed the browser, so we'll launch it again. Oops, getting posts. So click on Scott, and there's some things about me. I live in Maryland on the east coast of the United States. That's very simple. And if you're doing anything with MVC, you can do something very similar. You can just say, go to this action on this controller and pull back either string data or pull back JSON data. If you want to handle errors, though, what happens if something goes wrong? There's a couple different options. One is to fall back on this $.ajax method, because this allows you to be very explicit about everything that's going to get passed up to the server and how it's going to behave. So I can say the type of this request is going to be a post. This is the URL it's going to. Here's all the form encoded data that I want to pass along. The timeout's going to be 5,000 milliseconds. On success, graph this thing into the detail again. But on error, I get three parameters to my error function: the XML HTTP request object itself, the HTTP status, and then an exception object. So you can use that to, typically you don't show any of that stuff to the user, but you can at least tell them that, oh, something failed, please try again in 30 seconds. Right? That's what all websites do. Particularly the travel websites. You know, sorry, couldn't book your flight that you just spent 10 minutes selecting, try again in 30 seconds. Another way, if you just want to find out all of the AJAX activity that's going on in a page, is to just to hook these global AJAX events the jQuery exposes. So complete, error, send, start, stop, success. You can get information about everything that's going from your client-side page back to the server this way. I have a little demonstration of that so you can see the order of these events. And that is done with this code that's essentially wiring up each of these events, and it'll go out and append some text into the log element that's on the page. So if we run this and we do AJAX events and I go out and click Scott, you can see it started. So start gets sent. That event would get raised before it actually makes a request to the server. That would give us the ability to go in there and manipulate any settings that we might want to do on a global level or just log stuff. Then it was sent, it was successful, everything's completed, and then it stopped. So you can get different statistics at each of those points. Now, calling WCF web services. Who's using WCF services that they call from script? Just a few. Anyone still using ASMX web services? Okay. That's ASMX web services have been around since the very .NET 1.0, right? And they're still supported. It's just the WCF was supposed to completely take over that space. What I'm about to show you would work for either approach. Let's say that my git instructor info was not a simple ASHX handler, but someone has already implemented it as a WCF service. And we're talking about a script service that has the ability to return JSON data. ASMX and WCF both have that ability to return JSON data. Now, if you're happy with what ASP.NET does, then you can just stick with that. What ASP.NET does, if you go into your script manager, you can tell it that I want to reference such and such a service. So let's say that I had a script manager here. I can tell this that there is already a service, that there is a service it can call called instructor service. And essentially what that line of code does is it generates a JavaScript proxy object that you can use in the client side to invoke that service, and everything just works for you. However, that client side proxy that it generates relies on the entire Microsoft AJAX library, client side libraries, which if you are using jQuery heavily, chances are, and especially if you're building a public website, chances are you don't want to send down jQuery library and the Microsoft library and this dynamic proxy because it's more JavaScript code than anyone would ever want on a single page. So that still works. You're more than happy to do that. But what I wanted to show you is how to do it, call WCF just from jQuery. And that is, it's always going to be a post operation, so type is post. The URL is going to be the SVC endpoint slash, and then the operation that you want to invoke. So instructorinfoservice.svc/git-instructor-info is the method on that web service that I want to invoke. My data is going to get passed up essentially as JSON. So it's going to be in that almost object literal looking syntax, name, colon, value. Right. I can still set the timeout. Content type, I want to tell WCF that I want it to return JSON. I could return XML too, but then it's up to me to parse the XML, which, you know, parsing SOAP messages from JavaScript isn't really fun. there's one little trick here. So once, if it's successful, invoke this method on success. But before you parse the JSON, before you work with the data, I'm passing along this option called data filter, and I'm saying before anything, when you get the data back, I want you to invoke a method called parseJSON, because the JSON return from WCF is not just something that you can eval, and it's not something that jQuery understands inherently. And I can show you what parse.json looks like. I can make this available for download. Essentially, what I did was I went into the Microsoft libraries, and I ripped out the piece that they used to parse results. Now I just have to remember where it is. It is in jQueryWCF.aspx, so it should be inside of here. There's this little regular expression that goes in and makes sure that the dates get parsed out properly of WCF web services. And there's also an issue with ASP.NET web services returning things encased inside of a D. That's a security feature. You can go out and research. I won't go into it too much here today. But essentially, those four lines of code are needed to interpret what WCF is sending back to me. So it's possible. Just needs a little bit of help to do this. Let's see if we have it working right now. Oops. Oh, and you know what? No, this should be working. Oh, I have a debugger keyword in there for some reason. Interesting. Well, I'll look at why this is happening. Oh, instructors null. That's interesting. We'll come back to this if we have time and figure out why that's not working. In the meantime, let's stop debugging. Oh, so jQuery UI. jQuery UI is not part of the core jQuery download. It's something extra that you go out and download because it contains a neat number of widgets. With that, you can do things like make my menu resizable. So give it a little drag area where a user can just walk up and make it bigger or smaller. Make a section hide when someone clicks on it, but don't just hide it. Make it explode into 20 pieces over a period of 1 second. So let me show you how this beautiful thing works. There's a murmur in the crowd. Is the explode worrying you? I hope not. I think my, oh, there we go. See if I can get this to stop debugging. And now we can go to this page. And, oh, right, when I collapse it, there's that little explode effect. Are you laughing at me or laughing with me? Just wondering, because I have a feeling you're laughing at me. All this is really neat to put together. What you do is you go to jQueryUI.com, and this is a website where you can essentially build a custom download of the things that you want the things that you need in your application. So there is a core part of jQuery that you need to download. Where's my little zooming menu here. There we go. But what I can do in here is I can come in and say deselect everything. I'm just going to pick the things I need. Because what I wanted to do is I wanted the accordion control, and I wanted a button control, and I wanted the explode effect. And what that'll do is it'll package up JavaScript code such that when I click download, I'm only going to download those features that I'm actually going to use, and I'm not going to download JavaScript code that implements draggable, droppable, resizable, and all this other stuff. So somewhere on this page, it used to tell you exactly how big your download is given what you've selected. But I don't actually see that on here now. All I see is 6 of 30 selected. And there's some demos on here, so you can see what these things do. Accordion control. Is, oh yes, yes, right. I was trying to get that one to collapse. Thank you. Always good to have an audience when I can't figure things out. Autocomplete control, there's a date picker. Essentially, a lot of the things that people like to use in the Ajax control toolkit, a lot of those things are in here. So if you're worried about not having the Ajax control toolkit around, you can still get a lot of those features out of here. Once you have your custom download, oh, and by the way, you can also pick themes. So you can pick the type of themes that you want. And unfortunately, here we go. You can also get, that'll give you a CSS style sheet that implements a specific theme for you. There was one that I liked that was called Vader or something like that. It was pretty good. It was kind of a dark theme. Yes, sir. Is there something similar in jQuery to the model view controller like we use? Oh, the modal thing? Yeah, that is, modal dialog is in here. See if we can find it. It is in the UI. This dialog control, I believe, is the one we're looking for. So it would give you something like that? Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah.
Apply custom transforms to the data. So like you bring JSON data back and now you want it templated into HTML. That's actually the stuff that Microsoft wants to commit to jQuery. So, and if you go out and look at the stuff on GitHub, you can actually start playing around with that. I don't have a... Oh, where was that on my slide? This thing? That's exactly what that's designed to do. So that with that thing, you can say, okay, here's a div, and then inside of that one, anchor tag, and this is where I want the first name displayed. You know, and this is going to be the href, and you essentially bind, you can bind that to data that you're pulling back from the server. That's exactly what that does. More questions? jQuery UI is just one example of many plugins that are available for jQuery. Let me just show you that site also. So plugins.jquery.com. You can come in here and find things broken into all sorts of categories. Excuse me. So different things to do, animations, layout, work with media, do navigation, so grid controls, things that aren't in the jQuery UI, there might be another plugin for it. And it's pretty straightforward to write a jQuery plugin. Here's an example. What I'm doing is here is adding a log method to jQuery, and there's two types of things I want to log. There's errors and there are warnings. What that lets me do is do $.log.error, right? And then presumably error would write out to a trace output somewhere. Something else that you can do, though, is implement something that's going to work on the wrap set. So jQuery.functions.debug. Essentially, I'm adding a debug into the collection of functions that will be available on the jQuery object. And what it's going to do is it expects to be working with a wrapped set. So it's going to say for each thing in that set, pop up an alert box. Truly annoying, but what that would let me do, for instance, is to say $, find all the anchor tags, .debug, and then it would pop up and show me what anchor tags it found on the page, which reminds me of a little tip for debugging with jQuery or investigating jQuery. Let me go to the selectors thing, and let's say that I was trying to figure out if pound menu is actually going to return anything. I'm going to set a breakpoint there. And run with the debugger. And hopefully we'll hit that breakpoint. Which brings me to my second tip, which is when the breakpoints don't work, resort to the debugger keyword. Let's try this again. F5 to debug. Selectors. Oh, you know what? I might need to do like a hard refresh in here. Nope. Well, that's truly annoying. Let me go back to this thing that was throwing. Okay. We're in the debugger. That's all I cared about. I'm going to open up the immediate window. So debug windows immediate. If immediate doesn't show up, because it doesn't always show up on the debug menu by default, you can go into Tools, Customize, and under Commands, under the debug command there, you should find the immediate window listed under here, right there. You can pull that thing out and drag it and drop it wherever you want on the menu, and then it's available. So the immediate window is really cool, because it's essentially an interactive JavaScript interpreter at this point. I can say $ anchor tag. What does that give me back? Oh, I see I get, there must be 7 anchor tags on the page. What about p inside of a div? Yeah, it turns out there were 3 of those. So I can interactively work with jQuery and make sure my selectors are working right. That's one way to do it that I like to do. Another way to do that would be to pop up alert box. That's what you can do to the developer that you don't like who's on the team. And I mentioned the CDN before, so if you keep everything, if you pull everything down from the CDN, you may not trust it, but it'll run fast. And that's pretty much wanted to present to you today. So I'll take some questions, but I did want to point out jQuery, the subtitle for it is the Write Less, Do More library. And that was the whole idea behind the design of jQuery, is to let you do things like exploding divs using just a couple lines of code to make it very simple. It's all about selecting DOM elements and then manipulating sets of those DOM elements, whether you're wiring up events or invoking services to graft HTML back into the DOM somewhere. And it's really about leveraging JavaScript. So John Resig did a great job making taking the functional approach of working with JavaScript and saying, I'm going to write a library that knows how to do stuff, like wire up click events, filter things, reverse those filters. You just have to tell me what it's supposed to do when it's filtering or when something gets clicked. And it has communication options, so you can do all your JSON stuff with it. So, questions? Yes, sir. Oh, yes. Yeah, sure. So the question was about custom events. What I can do, and actually I already have this in another project. Let me bring up this MVC project. That if you were in my talk this morning, this will look familiar. And let me just change something real quick. So I'm going to take this line of code out of here. So here's the idea. In this application, I have a clock on the screen. That's animated in orange. But it's just trying to update every second. And it doesn't update when I have it zoomed in like that. But ignore the fact that it's ugly and that it's a clock, right? think of it as, you know, okay, someone pressed a button to order a widget, someone just logged in, something like that. And you're interested in that event happening. So you're interested in when the clock, in this case, when the clock updates the screen. But you don't want to walk up to that clock and directly subscribe to the event. You want a more general pattern where you just, this event gets published out. Hey, the clock is updating. And then there might be 5 or 10 people that have no idea about the clock. They can subscribe to that event and do something magical, right? So the way that could work is inside of the clock, the magic method is called trigger. So I can dollar sign anything, dollar sign the document, dollar sign a div, dollar sign an anchor tag, and I can say trigger this event called clock update, which is the only way clock update would ever be an event that gets raised, because there's no such thing in a DOM element, actually, right? There's no clock update thing. So I'm saying raise that event, and let's get rid of the this for right now. Just raise that event. So somewhere else in my code, somewhere completely unrelated, I can just go out and say, I'm interested in clock update events. I don't care where they come from. I just want to know about them. But when I get them, what I'll do is I'll go out to that thing and trying to think what I can do. Well, we'll just keep up with the slide toggle thing. Right. But this is still sort of coupled because, oh, the clock's updating, but now I'm going out and I'm picking up a specific DOM element, which means if there were multiple clocks on the screen or, you know, multiple purchase events, this wouldn't be working so well. The other neat thing you can do with these events is that you can pass along parameters. You pass them along in an array. So what I'm saying is trigger the clock update event and pass me the clock along as a parameter. And this is a little more reasonable, because now what I can say is I'm going to get a clock parameter. And I know the clock has certain properties, like it has an element property, the associated element. So that's a little more generic, right? Whatever clock raised that event, I'm going to walk up to its element and tell it to slide toggle. So that's how that page was working. And this code is sort of neatly decoupled from this whole clock implementation. Does that answer the question? Okay. Yes, sir. Yes.
You're doing it from HTTPS. Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay, so the question is, the document ready event through jQuery doesn't sort of conflicts with what you might want to do for the update panel?
Yeah, for example, you're using a jQuery plugin, which initializes.
Okay. I have to admit, I've not used the two in combination, but if you send me an email, I can dig into that problem. I know that with the update panel, there's that page request manager that you might need to dig into and catch events on it. Okay. Well, tell you what, I'm going to hang around for a few minutes or the rest of the day and answer questions. But if you don't have any questions, thanks for coming.